Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour podcast. On tonight's show, we meet millennial entrepreneur Angelica Mallon. We talk about fly fishing, and star of Derry Girls, Siobhan McSweeney, is in the studio with us.
Underwear, armpit hair, many imitators, but no one compares.
Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell, and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
One, two, three.
Now, if you've ever thought that the working world was maybe not designed for you and you could do it better, then our next guest is going to be able to help you out. She is the founder of not one but two businesses, starting out in her early 20s, taking on an industry that is basically dying, which is publishing, and saying, no, I think we can do it better. Welcome to Badass Women's Hour, Angelica Mann. Hello.
Thank you for having me.
So for anyone who hasn't seen About Time, the magazine,
yes,
tell us about it.
Sure. So I run a lifestyle website called About Time. We discover anything it's about time you tried in London and beyond. So whether that's London's best avocado on toast or kind of crazy new fitness experiences in the capital, we kind of unearth these experiences that are worth your time and money.
And how did you go about starting it up?
Well, actually, I feel quite lucky because I've never really had a proper job in that I've never worked for anyone else. And my experience hosting events over the last few years is that jump from full-time employment to working for yourself is really scary and it puts a lot of people off. And I actually launched straight out of university. This was the first thing I ever did and it's the only thing I've ever done since. And I think that's, I feel really privileged for that because I don't know any different. I don't know what a 9-to-5 really feels like. So I started out of university. I worked for a magazine in my last year of Bristol University, and then straight off the bat when I graduated I thought I'm going to have a go at my own thing, and I launched the website and kind of went from there, and it grew as a business. And I can't say I had a huge business plan when we launched, but being kind of flexible in mindset, 5 years on I'm still here, which is amazing. A long time in digital media. Dog years.
And have you seen that this is the growing trend in terms of people determining that there's a different way to do what used to be called the milk round, so that you can leave university and start your own business, or you can get a more generic 9-to-5 and have a test out 3 or 4 different ideas?
I've definitely seen a trend in the time that I've been doing this towards more people working for themselves or having portfolio careers where they're doing multiple things, having a couple of different part-time jobs to make up their week. I think people are frustrated with traditional work cultures and office environments and they want to have a bit more of a flexible approach. And I think millennial kind of generation, it's this purpose-driven generation. So they want to feel really fulfilled by their work. It's not about working for a paycheck or just to fill in the hours of the day. They want to feel that fulfillment from the work. So I've definitely seen a trend towards it.
What do you notice though, people having burnout? Because when you're doing multiple things, I don't know how you manage it. You said that you've got two businesses. I personally had a phase where I did a portfolio career of things, and it's intense. It's really intense in terms of how you do that, the pressure on you to make things work, the pressure to keep generating an income when you don't have that regular pay. So do you notice that?
Definitely. I think this new kind of landscape of work is having a massive effect on people's mental well-being. There is quite a lot of pressure. Like you said, if you're financially responsible for yourself, you're trying to juggle lots of different things. Also, the other side of it is that if you're not in an office with a traditional structure, you don't have those people around you constantly in that support network of being in an office. You're working for yourself, you're working out of Soho House or out of Costa, and you're kind of on your own, and it can be quite scary. So I think building having support networks where possible is the solution to that. So finding other entrepreneurs, other people who are a portfolio journalist or an entrepreneur, and creating a structure around yourself to take some of the pressure off.
The other thing I'm noticing as well is I was in work. I didn't set up my own thing till I was 37. So I spent a long time being employed, different organisations, lots of time and money spent on my nurturing and my training and development. How are people developing? Because I feel like being an entrepreneur is a brilliant skill, but it is one skill in industries and workforces that need lots of other different skills. So how are people who, or how do you do it yourself actually, when you've just come out of university and you're running a business, how do you fast track all that kind of learning and development that traditionally you got from kind of climbing up a career ladder?
It's true, and I think it can be a challenge to know what your trajectory really looks like, because you're often, it's in a frontier industry where you don't really have someone ahead of you and a career path to follow. But I think nothing kind of trains you for the real world like running your own business, because you've got to develop a lot of skills very quickly. So for example, we host events through the About Time Academy, which I'm sure I'll talk about, and events is a completely different skill set to running a magazine and writing content. You've got to be super organized and on top of things and logistical, so you can just pick up these skills through challenging yourself to not do the same thing every day and take on new projects.
What have you learned along the way, do you think? Is there, going back looking at where you started now, what are the bits where you're like, oh, why did I do that? If I knew what I knew now, I would never have done it that way.
I think for me, the biggest challenge in business is people. So hiring the right people, putting trust in them, knowing when to let people go. Like, all of those relationships are very challenging, especially if you're doing it off the bat from university, where you've not done a few years in a company. You don't know what it looks like to have a good manager. That's the stuff that I have found the most challenging, is how do you keep people inspired? And I think also with small businesses, where you're not able to perhaps promote them as quickly because there's not anywhere for them to go. You can't offer the big kind of corporate perks, like, you're not going to get a David Lloyd membership working for me. What can you offer beyond that is really going to help someone grow as a person and stay in the role? So retention with small businesses is a challenge.
How did people react to you when you started rocking up at meetings and they were expecting somebody in their, say, 30s or 40s and you turned up in your early 20s?
I've tried to leverage it for the best, actually. I've tried to see it as a positive, as I think when you're young and you're passionate and you're a bit hungry, people are willing to take more of a chance on you, actually. And they want to invest in you in your career. So a lot of the partnerships we've done, people have said, okay, well, we'll give you a go. And they were actually kind of excited about working with a young new media partner than kind of one of your traditional outlets. So I think it has been for the best. I perhaps when I was much younger, kind of 23, 24, there were a lot of circumstances where I was like, oh, this feels a little bit seedy, and I've gone for meetings that have been like turned into kind of martinis at a private members club with an older man, and I've thought, this doesn't feel quite right anymore. And I think as I've got older, I've known what a meeting looks like a bit better. But we've all had those experiences, haven't we, where you're naive to a situation, you think, oh, they're trying to help me, and you're like,
To go back to when you were first starting up, how did you fund yourself? Because it's one thing going from university and having potentially student loans or a safety net of university to try something, moving into actually there are bills to pay and a life to create. So how did you fund yourself in the early days?
I think it's a little bit easier actually starting out straight out of university, because you have a lot less costs. So I was living at home. I didn't have a kind of a mortgage, anything big like that. So I used some savings. I think I had about £600-800 in the bank of savings. So I spent it on a very low rent, easy website that I got a friend to make for me. And that was our first iteration. And I think it was about £400, which is amazing now, because we do these super expensive design builds. And I'm like, God, I can't believe that was what it costed. And then from there, it took a few months to generate some income. We started to do a bit of sponsored stuff and it started to come in. And then from there, we were able to sail. And I think I felt very lucky that we haven't taken outside investment. I think it can put a lot of pressure on a business when you start out, if you've got an investor and you've got these things to meet, and it can just kill the creativity and the passion because you're stressing out loads. So I had offers of investment and I walked away from all of them. And I'm pleased with that now.
And so it was all organic.
It was all organic, but I didn't start off with any staff. So the growth kind of happened in like year two, year three, where I started to take on full-time people and expand a team. I wasn't able to do that in the first year, to be honest. It was just me, and mentally it was pretty tough. Mm. You're on your own. You're like, oh God, I'm so much self-doubt. You're like, what am I doing? I must be crazy. Yeah. But you find other people who've done similar things, and that's what keeps you going, really. Yeah.
And are you going to scale the business? So is about time moving into other things? You've got an academy, but yeah. Are you also going to take it to other cities?
Definitely. So the academy is kind of coming off of the back of something we've been doing for the last few years. We host events. We've done about 55 events over the last few years. But I felt like there was a need to take that a step further and make it a bit more official and proper. So we've actually launched the About Time Academy. We have a separate website, newsletter, everything like that. And we're doing 4 or 5 events a month in London. And it's anything, it's about time we discuss or learned. See what I've done there. So we have, you guys were talking earlier about menopause, we have an event about time you balanced your hormones naturally with some specialists in hormones. So we're doing all different kinds of panel talks, discussions, and I'm really excited about it, and we've had a really good response. We had our first one last week, about 55 people, about starting a food brand. It's always a very popular topic. Everyone's got an idea for something. So we had some founders, like the founder of Pip and Nut, who make delicious nut butter, and Cold Brew Coffee Company, talking about their founder journey, how they got it off the ground. So I think creating spaces where people can get advice and a bit of informal mentorship is great.
Okay, we are going to keep talking to Angelica about how she does everything she does here on Badass Women's Hour XL.
Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
She'll get you talking.
Fabulous Angelica runs About Time, both the lifestyle website and About Time Academy, things you should learn now. Angelica, what, so the let's, because we were just talking about reading retreats, let's talk about this. You send people on About Time things that it's about time they did now.
Exactly. So we get, over the years, we've had some amazing freelance pitches of people wanting to experience things and write them up, whether it's like about time you did naked meditation or going on a reading retreat. And sometimes I get really into it and then I'm like, actually, is it about time you did that? Like, would I go and do naked meditation? Like, probably not.
What is the weirdest thing you've ever sent anyone on?
Oh God, so much. Dog yoga. Where you go like with your dog and you
definitely
do it.
Every time there's more of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think anything to do with dogs is great.
Just, yoga.
Who does not need a bit of yoga with their dog?
We sent someone to an owl cafe.
Would love that.
Oh, you could go and sit with owls.
Yeah.
Really? Well, I'm not sure it's about time for that.
No,
that brings
neither.
Me a little bit.
I've recently been researching for a piece about mushroom lattes. Apparently it's
mushroom coffee.
Mushroom coffee. I mean, I've yet to find one I've liked. Just put so much sugar in it that you can't
tell. You should have a spoof site called It's Not About Time. You did these things. Yeah. And just list
the scrap heap of what doesn't make it. Yeah. It's funny because also with events, we're in the process of curating the events that we do. And you know, when you can get so far into your own project that you kind of can't see out of it anymore, and we're organizing things. We have an event that we're planning with a woman called Sophie, who married herself. Don't know if you know.
Oh, I did see that story.
Rita, I married me, and she's talking about why she married herself.
I keep telling all my friends that on my 40th birthday I'm doing this big thing, and they've all had to book it out of their diaries for like 5 years, and if anyone says they can't make it for whatever reason, that's it, they're official off my friendship list. And I was talking to them and I said, well, no, it's a big thing because it's essentially my wedding. Mm-hmm. And they all looked at me like I was crazy. I was like, no, you've had this big day all to yourself. I want it for
you. Yeah,
I understand why people marry themselves.
So that I completely understand. The dog yoga I'm still confused about.
Oh, I love dog yoga.
But yeah, cool. Marry yourself.
Why not? Yeah.
When you're putting together events for the About Time Academy, how do you know what it is people are going to want to come to?
There is an element of trial and error, definitely. Some things really connect with audiences, and then some things you're really excited about and it doesn't perhaps spark their imagination. We have found that anything to do with starting your own business tends to do really well, especially in food, fitness, health, because I think there are certain business areas that people think that there's a lower barrier to entry. Mm-hmm. So women are more interested in starting a food brand. You can do it on the side. You can go to a local market on the weekend, whereas tech perhaps seems a bit more intimidating. So certain industries have really captured people's imagination. And then beyond that, we've got events like getting a book deal has been very popular with Rebecca Rees, talking about the process of pitching and how you get a book deal. We have an event called Young Wild and Freelance, which is for people who are freelance in London. I feel like there's a real problem with freelancers getting really lonely during the week and not having other freelancers to connect with. So we do this wonderful event. It's on a Sunday. You come along, we put on a breakfast spread, spread. We split people into areas based on where they live in London. So we'll have people from South London,
that's
West
so
London.
Nice. That's a good idea.
Yeah. And they're in a group together. And the idea being that that means that if they get on, they can meet up during the week and they can go work in a coffee shop together. And that's been really lovely. So we have one of those coming up and we're doing a workshop in productivity for that one. It's a bit of a mixture of different appetites, but I very much feel like it taps into millennial workforces. Like this is the kind of skills that people want to develop because the world of work is really shifting.
Do you find that you're obviously somebody who likes to juggle lots of different ideas? Do you think that's something that is a millennial trait? This idea that actually we don't just want to do one thing, we don't want to have one career for the rest of our lives, we like being able to dip in and out of different industries.
I think so, but I also think that we perhaps have slightly glamorized that to the detriment of the 9-to-5. People are saying, oh, it's really boring to have a 9-to-5, it's unambitious of you. And actually I don't think that's true. I think for some people that works, like a work structure, they know where they're going, they like that routine. Like the life that I lead is not for everyone. You know, you've got to be pretty emotionally resilient, quite a lot of self-confidence and self-belief, and I don't always feel that. And there's nothing wrong if you just want to have a job and get a nice paycheck. Like, God, having a regular salary, that's lovely. So I don't think there's any correct way to do it, but it is about asking yourself those lifestyle questions. What do I want my life to look like? Do I want to be able to travel, or do I want to just have something set?
Yeah, because there's a lot of heroism and, I don't know, you see a lot of success, don't you, on social media, and people are very good at painting their lives like they're having this amazing freelance life. But if you look at the stats of people opening businesses at Companies House, how many of those businesses fail, what the average freelancer is earning, like it's tough.
Definitely.
It really is tough.
Definitely. And there's so much that doesn't come with being freelance. So, you know, like holiday leave or whether someone's going to cover for you. Yeah. There's loads of these considerations, or just doing your own tax return. Like, it's not for everyone, for sure.
Holiday is a big problem, isn't it? Because you, as a freelancer, there's always a fear that the second you decide to take some holiday, that is the second when all the work is going to come in. How do you manage that? Have you taken a holiday?
I have. Well, I have a team, so it's not impossible for me to take some time off. Like, I have people to delegate to, and that's been a real blessing. But definitely, yeah, in the first year I was like, God, you've got to make everything work and you've got to always be working. But to be honest, I work weekends, and I've made peace with that. I used to find it really sad and I was like, oh, I shouldn't be working. But actually, just find something that works for you. And for me, I get a little bit of peace getting myself ready for the week on a Sunday evening for a couple of hours, and that's okay. So I think we have to slightly throw out the rule book with what a good work-life balance looks like. Just find something that works for you.
Do you think some people that want to make that transition are held back by what other people think about their decision to work for themselves or have that different lifestyle? So I've definitely had people ask me over the years, how do you explain to your friends that you do want to work, or you don't mind working at the weekends, and therefore you can't go out or don't want to go out, or explaining to family and friends the job, or feeling a load of anxiety when someone says, so what is it that you do? And not necessarily having the ready-made answer.
Yeah, definitely. I think when someone asks you, what do you do? And then you have an answer that involves multiple different things, they're a bit confused. Yeah. They're like, oh, do you actually do anything? Because it sounds like you do everything. Yeah. It's much easier to be like, I'm a lawyer. But that shouldn't put you off. I think you just have to do it for yourself. And I've made peace with all of these things, but it's probably taken a good few years to do that.
Do you think that people should, do you think that there is sustainability in a portfolio career? Or do you think that it's a short-term thing that people should do to find out what they really, really like and enjoy, or find something that is going to take off and generate the income? Or do you think it's something that people could do for 10, 20 years?
I actually think as we get older, portfolio careers look more enticing. Like, if we look at the latest gender pay gap stats, the issue of flexibility in the workplace, I think, is what's holding women back a lot. If you have a portfolio career where you work for yourself, you set your own hours, you can make it work around you, that's pretty enticing. And it's definitely something that I've thought about. As I've got older, I've not wanted to give things up because I thought, well, this will be good when I want to have kids, that I can hopefully mold my work around that. So I think it is sticking. But like you said, it might be useful just to dip your toe into a couple of different things and find what excites you.
Yeah, because my challenge is, can you be good at several things at once? And that was my learning from...
Look at me.
apart from Natalie Campbell, it's just brilliant at everything. I had two or three years of playing around with stuff. And while it was wonderful fun, I knew I had to like knuckle down and focus, because otherwise I was never going to be successful, because I was doing things in different industries. Mm-hmm. They were different topics, and I just could not be the expert that I needed to be to really leverage what I was learning and what I was doing. So for me, when people say they're doing a portfolio career, I'm like, brilliant, do it. But in my experience, it was like that was a short time thing. And I don't think I could have really, I could have sustained doing it, but I would have been really tired. I would have been the kind of master of nothing, really. Do you know what I mean? Because I could only light touch what I was doing.
I do. I think it helps if they're related fields. So you might want to be a journalist who also dabbles in radio or in film, in TV. It does help if they're kind of generally under the same umbrella.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like you said, you're wearing these different hats all day long. So I write, I run a magazine, I host events, but they all kind of linked together.
Yeah.
So you're not super stressed out. That said, I have a friend that's a sculptor 2 days a week and also runs an alcohol-free spirit brand the other 3 days. So I don't know, to be honest. I don't think I have the answer. I think sometimes people just have like two different passions and they want to do them both and they don't want to give up one.
Yeah, fair enough.
And before we let you go, what would you be recommending from all the things you've seen on About Time? What are some of the trends that you think we should be looking forward to and some stuff we should be trying out if we haven't already?
Ooh, good question,
that's
H.
That's a really good question. Okay, give me a second.
What's it about time that we do?
Okay, well, we just did a big trend roundup on 2019 travel trends. Cool. And nature sustainability were the top on that, according to Airbnb and Pinterest. So I think you should like go abroad and go stay in like a yurt or go somewhere for stargazing. Kind of connect to nature.
I'm up for the stargazing, not the yurt.
Not the yurt. No, but we're talking like like a luxe yurt. I mean, yeah.
I'm still not feeling it. No.
Just do a bit of an Attenborough, you know, go stay in somewhere really remote, or go stay in a tree house. I think a bit of a childish
luxury
tree house, sure. Okay. Like a tree house with like a hairdryer.
And an ensuite bathroom. And room service.
And then in London, there's loads of new restaurants. You can check them out on the magazine. Lots of contemporary fusion stuff going on, mainly around Hackney, I've noticed.
Yeah, that's quite, yeah.
I'm so bored of Hackney.
Really?
When is it coming back west again? I'm bored of it.
Yeah, I think so. Frank and Manka's giving free pizza to anyone who runs the marathon.
Now, you see, that is a great
tip. The London Marathon.
Yeah, so if you run the marathon...
I'm not running it, but I can make myself look like I'm running.
Or just, or
steal
get
a medal from someone.
Get a friend who's running it and take them in as payments.
Very good point.
Yeah, and low alcohol cocktails, that's become a big thing, hasn't it? Not no alcohol, but kind of using lower alcohol spirits. That's all over the place at the moment.
We'll look out for those. Thank you so much
You're
for coming.
You're so welcome.
Give us, where is the website? Where can we find it? Where should we be looking?
So it's abouttimemagazine.co.uk and abouttimeacademy.com and abouttimemag on all social media.
Fabulous. Thank you so much, Angelica Mallon. It's been lovely meeting you.
The Fempire Strikes Back. Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
Sitting on the dock of the bay here at Badass Women's Hour XL with Claire Zambouni, all to talk about fly fishing. Claire, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
So tell us what is the difference between fishing and fly fishing?
Okay, so fly fishing is much more skillful. It's much more peaceful. You have to cast the rod, so you have to create a loop at the back. So once you've learned that, then you can fly fish. So it's not as complicated as people make out. Course fishing is more lake fishing for carp, for perch. And I think it's one of the largest sports in the UK. And I think fly fishing traditionally has been viewed as not very accessible in the domain of the old Tweedy set. So that's why it hasn't been adopted so much. But that's all changing now.
Yeah, I blame the Yellow Pages ad with J.R. Hartley looking for the book Fly Fishing by J.R. Hartley. Yeah, and I was like, oh, okay, we'll obviously just old men fly fish then, because I've never seen anybody else fly fish.
Well, actually, I think historically it probably has been mainly old men. But no, it's a very different scene out there now.
Mm. And when you say fly fishing and the loop at the back, you mean, is it the way you flick the rod?
Yeah, so it's like basically cutting a slice of pie. So you have to flick your rod back to a certain way, and it's about the stop, and then you flick it the other way, and it's about the stop. And the skill as well is attaching the fly and which one you use. So the flies are mainly hand-tied, or you can buy them in the shops and they're ready-tied. And they replicate the life that's going on the river or the lake at the time. So I was fishing on Thursday and there were dark olives, so we were using nymphs that looked like that. And so it's to try and attract the fish to something that they're feeding on at the time.
Charades, isn't it? It's like, oh, look, it's a fly. No, it's not.
Yeah, it's a hunting game.
Claire, how did you get into it?
Oh, my God. So I got into it because years ago I sort of randomly got into field sports. I was vegetarian and I got into foraging and finding my own food. So I started...
I got into field sports because I was vegetarian. Did they tell you what they did at the field sports?
No, I kind of wanted to... If I was going to eat meat or fish, I wanted it to be ethically sourced and I wanted it to be sustainable and I wanted to know that the meat and the fish that I was eating wasn't pumped full of antibiotics or... Mm. And they basically lived a wild, happy life. And so the fishing, I thought, right, I'm going to give this a go. I thought it's going to be the most boring day of my life. And I went down to the River Test and I thought, oh, my God, here we go, you know. And it was the 10th of July and it was about 10 years ago now. And I started casting and I had this amazing man helping me out who was showing me all the different things in nature, you know, the different plants that were growing, the different wildlife, the different insects. And at the time, I thought I had a dog and a child to pick up and I had to leave at 5:30. And I remember I was so absorbed in everything. I just turned around to him and I thought, oh, it must be about 5. So what time is it? He said, it's 8:30. And I was like, oh, my God. So anyway, thankfully, my dog and my child were absolutely fine. But I couldn't believe, I'm a, you know, Londoner born and bred, and I couldn't believe how absorbing it was to be out there. And I think it's quite difficult if you live in a city to find ways of getting into the countryside and enjoying nature, because it's quite, you know, we all get stuck on our computers and on our phones and running around and on the underground and doing our thing, and we always think that what we're doing is so important and blah blah blah. And actually what fly fishing does is it takes you out to very beautiful places in the countryside, and it's quite solitary as well. So you can choose to be with friends or you can choose to do it on your own. And it just calms everything down. You know, you really engage in the changing of the seasons. You know, you see all the different things happening to the trees, to the river. You learn about conservation, which is incredible. And I think, you know, again, in an urban environment, we're quite shut off from that. So we don't see the issues. I mean, one of the shocking facts is that only 17% of our rivers are healthy. But that's because of, you know, farming methods and all of these things. So when you get involved in this, you can't help yourself from getting involved in conservation. You say you take an interest, you know, you get involved in the charities doing this work. And it's quite niche, like, you know, farmed salmon, we shouldn't be eating it. But you get quite passionate about it all, and it all becomes sort of part of life, really. It's that cycle of life, isn't it? It's sort of going out hunting, finding something. Often we do catch and release. Sometimes I took my trout home on Thursday and I'll be cooking those tomorrow. So it's not all about the catch, it's just about the absorption in the countryside. And, you know, for me it's really lovely because I can, you know, I have quite a stressful day job, and it just means that I'm away from all of that, and it's very accessible. So we sort of launched this campaign, the 50-50 on the water campaign, to make it more accessible. And that's going great guns now.
Mm. What's the kind of entry point if you want to do fly fishing? Is it quite expensive to get yourself set up with all the kit and all the... No? Okay.
No, it's not at all. Basically, all you need, you can go and get a free fly fishing course, go into any Orvis store and then just sign up, and they'll put you on what they call a 101 or a 201. The basic kit that you need will cost, you know, for a sort of reasonable level, for a fly rod and reel, £150, and then you're done. I mean, basically, you have to buy your flies. And so the fishing is more accessible than people think. Obviously, if you're going somewhere like the River Test, it's privately owned and it's quite tough to get on there, and sometimes it can cost more. We're changing that too. But if you go to some of the fisheries in the south, you can do that for £20, or some of the rivers, like the River Wandle, for instance, you can go in Wandsworth, you can go and fish free of charge. So fly fish down there. So there's lots of access points. It's just about getting to know about them, which is what we're trying to do. We're trying to get that out there, have quite a busy schedule of events which people can come to.
And so just so I'm clear, is fly fishing, are you in the water, standing in the water? Are you standing on the banks of the water?
Either or. So mainly on the banks, mm-hmm. but I've got full rubber. I can get in and get stuck in and down and dirty too. So, no, I've been in sort of massively fast flowing rivers up to my chest thinking, this is it. My days are done. My little spaniel's on the riverbank like, mummy, please come out now. You know, and you just think, one more cast. It's really addictive.
It sounded so calm up until that point.
I know, I was like, you started off by saying this really calm and relaxing, and now you're telling me I might be swept down the river to God knows where and be spewed out in the Solent. Not so sure. Maybe.
Yeah, no, don't do that. Oh my God.
Start on the bank first.
On the bank. And most fishing can really happily be done from the back with a lovely picnic, a glass of nice Chardonnay.
That sounds about right.
You can make it anything you want.
So what do you think stops people from taking on these sorts of pursuits? So we know that there is a barrier because maybe people just don't think it's for them. But what else? What other excuses do you hear people
say? I think that, you know, with all things, perception often becomes reality. So, you know, look at Brexit at the moment, or look at whatever it is, you know, whatever the public perception is almost becomes reality. And so I think historically perception has been that fly fishing is inaccessible. It's done by the fusty old tweedy set. You know, it's very male dominated. And I think people just think that they just don't know that it's open to them. And I mean, most of the people that we get involved, and the 50-50 campaign isn't just about women, it's gender parity. So there's, you know, men come along as well, but we do encourage more women because obviously there's a lack of them on the riverbank. But they all just say, oh my God, this has just been the most amazing time. I never thought I could do this. And so we're just trying to make that kind of journey into fly fishing a lot easier. And, you know, now, I mean, America actually on this level is one step ahead of us. And so they've got a lot of people out there doing it, youngsters, women. And then, you know, through social media, you can see all these amazing, inspiring images of these beautiful places in the wilderness and in nature. And that's beginning to happen in the UK now. I mean, there's some amazing young girls out there, like Marina Gibson. She's phenomenal. She's fishing all the time and she's a real inspiration. And there's people also, you know, there's a lot of groups forming. Like, there's an amazing charity called Casting for Recovery, and they support women with breast cancer because the casting action is really good for them. And they get these retreats, they're private retreats, no charge. So all the fishing companies donate the fishing, donate the tackle and all that sort of stuff. And so these women just have a private space to talk about, you know, their recovery or not. And that's had the most phenomenal results. And actually some of the women that within that charity are now qualified instructors and they've taken it up full time. So they've followed it as a passion as well.
I loved that. Claire, thank you so much for coming in and telling us about it. I'm inspired.
Are you going to come?
I really want to. Please, yes. Can I?
I'm going to get your details.
I would love that.
Great. We've got a whole load of stuff going on.
Oh, my
on,
gosh,
so
yes.
I'll get you on the bank.
I genuinely really want to.
Are you guys going to come?
We can
go from Northwest London.
I'll bring the picnic.
We always have a lovely picnic.
That's the Orvis 50-50 on the water campaign. Do go and check it out.
The Fempire Strike. Mike's back. Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
If you are anything like me, you've been obsessed with Derry Girls while it has been on. It was one of those creeper hits that I saw people talking about and then I caught up with it, and in a day I think I'd done the whole of season one. I loved it. And we are very excited to have star of the show, Siobhan McSweeney, in the studio. Hello, welcome.
Hello. How are you? Thanks so much for having me.
Siobhan, what's it like to have been part of a show that... it didn't get a lot of fanfare when it first launched, and then suddenly Derry Girls was everywhere and everyone loves it. Second series has just finished.
The third one has been confirmed as well.
Yay!
Yeah, no, it's been absolutely extraordinary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I suppose there's no way you can ever tell whether a show is going to be successful or not. You can only hope. We knew that the scripts were extraordinary. We knew the director was just perfect. The production company, everything was wonderful. The girls are amazing. Everybody was amazing in it. But we all know that makes... That doesn't mean anything. So when we launched, and to have that amount of support was really gratifying. You could sort, because things are a bit mad at the moment, aren't they? Just in general, to have sort of a little bit logical. Oh, this is good, and other people think it's good. Yay! The world isn't completely banjaxed. I was going to say something worse there, but
Well restrained. I think that is actually part of the joy of it, which is that it feels like it's come at the exact right moment, because it's about a piece of historical time when it was crazy and that craziness existed. And now I think we had sort of a few years where we forgot about it and we thought, oh, it's everything's settled now. And now we're in a place where we're looking at it again going, oh, no, it's really not.
Yeah, no, it's almost like Lisa could see into the future and go, well, do you know what the world needs is a bit of a reminder of a time that isn't that long ago, and through laughter, basically, almost warn us never to get back to that again. I love that it's on at the moment. It gives a little touchstone. It casts a human eye on the North, in the middle of a lot of diatribe that aims to dehumanise that country, really, in a way. So it couldn't come at a better time, but it's a real shame that this is the time.
You play Sister Michael in the show, who I love for the sort of eye-rolling... slight dissension from the word she knows she should be speaking, everything she knows she should be saying, and there's always a little part in her brain which is like, I actually went to a convent school, so it brings back a lot of memories, happy and otherwise, for me.
Are you traumatized reliving through a lot of trauma?
So it is hilarious. Whenever I watch Dairy Girls on Twitter, I go through the feed and it's basically a load of convent girls from the 90s being like, oh my God, this was my life.
I know. And the irony is, of course, that I wasn't taught by nuns.
Were you not?
No. I keep saying this. I've never met a nun. And then I had to change it to, like, knowingly. It may have been in disguise. But no, I haven't. So everybody, even today, somebody tweeted me going, it's so obvious that you went to a convent. I'm like, no, sorry babes, no. Nope.
She's like saying, I'm just really good.
I'm just that good. It's all the acting. Yeah. It's all the acting. Yeah, a lot of acting. No, I think there's a lot of, when a character is so well written.
Yeah.
And perhaps in a way so underrepresented, you project everything onto us. You're looking at a teacher, you're looking at a nun, you're looking at a nun at a particular point of time. You go, oh, she must be like my experience at that time. You know,
definitely.
Yeah.
How has it been for you and your career working on a show that has become so successful?
Well, I'm unemployed at the moment, so
resting in between.
I'm horizontal. It's been wonderful. It's allowed me to have a voice. Well, how do I put it? I've always campaigned and sort of been involved in certain political issues. And now, because of Derry Girls, and I feel that there is not necessarily an unwelcome, but I find it very unusual to be looked at. I went back to Ireland recently. I was recognised. It's all very new, and it's people sort of think that you, when you're an actor, that's what you want, and they conflate the two. They think the job is partly that. There was an article recently even talking about how actors need to have we shouldn't complain about going to the gym because that's part of our job, being lusted over, some other ignorant statement like that. And there's a complete confusion as to what our job actually is, and it has nothing to do with fame, and in my case, certainly nothing to going to the gym. But it's all about being lusted over. Definitely, she got that right. And I suppose what has changed is that now I feel that I can make something positive out of that very strange sensation of being looked at. Because actually, when you're an actor, you're controlling how you're being looked at. Mm-hmm. That you're actually the last thing you're doing is being vulnerable in a way, in a certain way, because it's not you.
Yeah.
I couldn't do half the things that my character does. And
ultimately, the last thing you're being is yourself.
Exactly.
And so when someone comes up to you in the street as yourself,
it's
a completely different experience.
That's exactly it. Well said. You see, I also can't speak, which is why other people write lines for me. You know? that's exactly it. It's me, and it's me in the shops. Looking at socks, and to be approached then is just, and you feel like you've let them down, really, you know. It's just a disappointment for everyone, really, you know. And you end up running out with no socks. So yeah.
Is there anything that you would change about your career as an actor?
Ah, that's a really good question. Anything I would change? I came to acting relatively late in that I did a degree first. Mm-hmm. I have a degree in a very unused, dusty degree in science, biological and chemical sciences, before I came to the UK to go to drama school. And I often wonder whether if I'd gone straight after school and gone to drama school then, and, you know, essentially would have had a longer time working, whether that would have made a difference. I still haven't made up my mind about that, because I think being a woman in the industry and your age, the two, you know, it's a very potent topic, and there's this automatic idea that if I was younger, it would be better. I feel, however, that all of my experiences have brought me to this point, and my ability to play roles, good, bad, or indifferent, is because of the life I've lived. And if I'd gone straight in after school, I'm not sure I would have had the maturity, certainly, or the sort of strength of will to put up with an awful lot of shite.
Oh. We're going to apologise for
I'm going to apologise, yes.
We know what you meant. A lot of rubbish.
A lot of the rubbish. Sorry, I thought that would make it less than the other word. my sincere apologies, genuinely. That the industry has towards young women. I think that I sort of escaped a lot of that, really.
Do you think that...
I'm blushing here now, by the way.
We've done it.
We've had worse. You talked about this idea that we've got this strange delusion around actors that they're to be lusted over, and particularly for young female actors, that we expect them to look beautiful at all occasions and fit into a certain mould of what we want from young women. Do you think that is changing because we're getting some completely kind of brilliant female-led dramas showing it from a different point of view?
I think there's two things when it comes to acting. There's the business and then there's the craft, the art. Yeah. So from the business side, you have an audience, and it's capitalism, supply and demand. What the market wants, the business will provide. And I feel that the market, the audience, wants something different now. Mm. I think even up to 5 years ago, the roles I would be going in for existed as a satellite around the male protagonist. Mm-hmm. I only existed through their eyes. Mm. That's an audience is they're bored of that now, and they're beginning to understand how unsatisfying it is to see people who are meant to be going through human experiences when they look so different from themselves. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I worry that because it's a sort of a capitalist thing and a supply and demand thing, that it'll become a trend. Mm-hmm. And the trend, it will become a fashion, and the fashion will become unfashionable. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, the stuff that is being done now will have a lasting effect. From the art point of view, if I could say the craft point of view, I think it's changing within our, I think writers are writing different stories, actors are accessing other parts of their vocabulary to play different roles. Yeah.
And you're also on Porters at the moment. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, Porters. Oh, yes, it's wonderful. It's on Dave at the moment, UK TV. And it's the second series. And I pop up as Alice, who's the security guard in this hospital. It's a comedy set in a hospital, the Porters. You know, very, very, wonderful collection of characters, and I play the over enthusiastic security guard. You know, one of those tropes that you get the security guard who thinks that they should be in the army.
They take it a bit too seriously. Too seriously, don't they enjoy it a bit too much.
Oh, yeah. So much fun, and also just thinking about gender, those parts are usually played by men, aren't they?
Yeah, that's true.
And to have a woman who's really enjoying violence, who's really like unfit and not able for the job, who looks funny in uniform. It's a great joy to push that again. It's good to step into those shoes, you know. Not many, and you know, she's great fun to play. It was it's still running at the moment. It's on Thursdays, and I believe that there are two more episodes left.
Yeah. That is what the notes tell us. So do go check it out. It's on Dave, and Siobhan McSweeney, we've loved having you in. Thank you so
much.
Thank
you. I'm a big fan.
Hopefully, we'll talk to you again.
Hopefully, yes. 1, 2, 3, 4.
This has been the Badass Women's Hour podcast with me, Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell, and Emma Sexton. If you want to hear more from us, you can come follow us on social media at Badass Women's Hour, HR, or leave us a review and tell us how much you love us. We really need to feel the love. 5 stars should do it.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.